Hey everybody, welcome back to the Baldi's Deliberations. Just want to say up front, once again, if this is your first time joining us, this is not required watching or listening. This is all just something that me and Jim have to do the Baldi's. So, you know, to produce the thing that's actually intended for people to watch and listen to, the Baldi's Award Ceremony. That should be linked at some point in the content you are watching, like in the show notes or in the YouTube description. So if you just want to know who won, and our thoughts behind the winners and the best of television and movies and acting in 2020, check out that award ceremony. But if you do want to do a deep dive into the decisions we made and the often agonizing choices that we have to do between very, very fantastic work, by all means, check it out. We have a category today that we are going to be deliberating over, the best male actor. And before we begin, I just want to say that, like, I thought I was on some pretty progressive shit when we did best male actor, best female actor, eschewing the actor and actress categories. And only to find myself five years later that female has had a distinctively pharyngeal pronunciation to it nowadays. And the fact that, like, you know, there's a lot of people that are lying betwixt these categories. They're starting to do good work in Hollywood. What do you do with a person who says, I am neither male nor female? I do not respect traditional gender norms. Or, you know, it's easy to have a person who's a trans woman or a trans man. You just put them in the category that they identify with. But when someone says that they are, I was just watching John Wick 3 and, you know, the main kind of bad villain, the middle management of the table is a non-binary person. Let's say that they did excellent work one year and got to the top of an acting category. What the fuck do you, the dilemma here is if you just abolish the categories and just have best actor. Sure. Because of other things in society, I think that traditionally masculine men are going to destroy that category, like just clean it up, because a lot of the serious role, like most of the serious roles, a lot of the stars, a lot, everything seems to go, you know, towards men. And that's just the way the deck is stacked. So I'm not saying anything other than like, I predict this being a problem in the years to come, and fuck it. Why not talk about it now? In the meantime, we're still going to have the male and female. If anyone has suggestions that would, you know, not essentially guarantee a unbroken win of men for the Baldies for the next, 10 years, send it in, host@baldmove.com. All right.
That said, best male actor. This is going to be a tough one. These bigger categories always are, right? Like best male and female actor, best drama, because there's a lot of competition and so many of them are so good. And I think as we go down this list, you'll see that we have our work cut out for us, narrowing it down. Should I go ahead and just read off the contestants? Sure. Contestants is what I'm calling them.
Yeah. Just kind of like brief, like right at first, we're just going to tell you who they are and what they played on what show.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get into like what their merits are. But first, here are the contestants.
In no particular order, Jude Law,
literally,
as the young Pope in the new Pope. Okay. Already confused. John Malkovich as the new Pope in the new Pope. Mm-hmm. Silvio Orlando as Cardinal Vojello in the new Pope. Jonathan Majors,
also known as the old Pope in the new Pope.
Oh, Christ. Jonathan Majors as Atticus Freeman in Lovecraft Country. Michael K. Williams as Montrose Freeman in Lovecraft Country. Jude Law as Sam in the third. Jude Law sneaking
double
on this list twice.
On the Jude Law. Oh my God. He's playing the leftovers game.
Does he win by default and we can just be done with this category?
We'll see.
In the third day, just as Sam, I guess. He only has one name. Carl Urban as Billy Butcher in The Boys Season 2. Anthony Starr as Homelander in The Boys Season 2. Laz Alonso as Mother's Milk in The Boys Season 2. Giancarlo Esposito as Stan Edgar in The Boys Season 2. Nick Offerman as Forrest in Devs. Ed Harris as Old William in Westworld Season 3. Aaron Paul as Caleb Nichols in Westworld Season 3. Chris Rock as Lloyd Cannon in Fargo season 4. Ben Whishaw as Rabbi Milligan in Fargo season 4. Morgan Spector as Herman Levin, I think, in The Plot Against America. John Turturro as Rabbi Bengelsdorf in The Plot Against America. Anthony Boyle as Alvin Levin in The Plot Against America. Francesco Acquaroli as Abel Villante in Fargo season 4. Glenn Turman as Dr. Senator in Fargo season 4. Ethan Hawke as John Brown in The Good Lord Bird. Joshua Caleb Johnson as Onion in The Good Lord Bird. Mark Proch? I don't know how to say that. As Colin Robinson in What We Do in the Shadows. Matt Berry as Laszlo in What We Do in the Shadows. Wes Chatham as Amos Burton in The Expanse season 5. Keon Alexander as Marco Inaros in The Expanse season 5. Josiah Chase Owens as Philip Inaros in The Expanse season 5. Brent Sexton as Sin in The Expanse season 5. Nicholas Holt as Peter the Third in The Great.
This Expanse show sounds pretty good. Had a lot of good acting in it.
What got the most here? Is it The Boys? I think The Boys has the most nods.
Do they really?
Yeah, 4.
I guess so. Yeah.
Just curiosity. Okay.
So are we going to do our standard send them to the top, let them float, send them to the bottom?
Sure. How do you feel about Jude Law? Send him to the top?
I mean, I'd send him to the top. He's already there, so I guess we're going to let him float.
Which performance?
Well, I mean, we're at the tippy top. We're starting at the Young Pope. So, okay. Jude Law is the Young Pope, yeah.
I want Jude Law to beat Jude Law for this category.
Jude Law takes on Jude Law. The most Jude Law role ever. That's more of a John Malkovich thing. John Malkovich takes on John Malkovich.
Yeah, for sure.
Speaking of, I mean, I'm fine. Like, this was another excellent performance. I didn't like it quite as much as Pope Lenny, Pope Pius. But still, like, if this show continues, like, my expectations were each year, their Pope has to be unconventional and extravagant in a completely different kind of way. And I felt like John Malkovich did that. Had big shoes to fill with Jude Law, you know, didn't quite completely fill them, but also gave us a lot of other, much more a vulnerable, openly vulnerable Pope. So,
To the top, or just leave him where he is, I guess. I don't know.
I don't think he goes to the top, but he stays right where he's at.
How about Voiello, Silvio Orlando?
Man, so this guy, I mean, he kind of makes the show, but he is much more of a supporting character, like literally kind of a foundational keystone type character that makes the arch stand, keeps the building from collapsing, rather than, you know, strutting his stuff the way Malkovich and Law are allowed to do. I also don't know to what extent, because he... I also don't know to what extent, you know, this is a part and how much he's just being himself, because he plays this role with kind of a flat affect, a disingenuous affect.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be that that's just a really fucking good performance.
Could be.
And he's really good at suggesting this guy has layers that you will never, ever, ever, ever see. Like, there's a couple quiet moments, like where he's by himself and not being observed. And there's, you know. I don't know. I don't think he goes. He floats, but he's probably going to not do well because of his foundational status. And that's the thing with those singular male category. We don't have a supporting category. So a lot of, like, Dr. Senator is going to be one of these guys that also suffers because the show doesn't revolve around them, you know?
Yeah. Typically the supporting actors have not fared very well in this category.
Yeah,
I don't know. You could almost call Anthony Hopkins a supporting character in Westworld at times. Although,
You
know, he has a lot to do. It's just like the show doesn't revolve around him. It's around the bots. But
you're right. Some people do kind of elevate those positions.
And it takes 50 years of acting legacy to do it. All right. And maybe Silvio has it. I don't know. I don't know his catalog. Jonathan Majors is Atticus Freeman. Lovecraft Country. I thought he was good but not the best in that show.
Yeah, I think the next gentleman, Michael K. Williams, did a lot of complex heavy lifting. There's there's difficult father and son work. There's difficult, you know, like a masculine type navigating the waters of being a gay man in the 50s. So you've got multiple layers, you know, like I'm a black man, I'm a gay man, I'm a masculine man. Oh, Jesus, how can that possibly... I thought that stuff was really great.
And just, you know, how that builds up over his life and the way he portrays like this man who has done really bad things for reasons that he kept justifying to himself because he had to get by. And like the way he portrays that character is just so good. And, I knew he was capable of some emotion, certainly, but I don't think I've seen this type of performance from him before. And it was pretty good. Not to say Jonathan Majors was bad. He was great as well. Just
He just didn't have the kind of the level of material that Michael K. And also that, you know, MKW has been working in this medium, doing this kind of thing, you know, changing people's minds about the masculinity and sexuality since like fucking Whistling on the Wire. Right. So like, I think he's got kind of like he builds on that material in this way. I also want to say that Courtney B. Vance barely missed the cut because his Uncle George, I thought, was really great. Like it. Yeah. There's a lot of things they're saying here in Lovecraft Country about intergenerational trauma and how you can like, you know, pay that forward and how it kind of perpetuates itself. And I thought that like, you know, even that relationship was fucking complicated because like that's I don't know if this is like ultra realistic or like a little bit kind of like you have to make relationships, but like every relationship is so complicated. Like somehow, you know, Atticus' dad was in a throuple relationship with his uncle and mom, and the aunt was somehow involved, and also the dad's in another relationship with the it's like everything was insanely complicated, probably more complicated than most people's baseline experiences. But
God, I would hope you know.
There's enough that almost everyone can relate to a portion of like, you know, you got beef with your dad. It might not be like a 6-layer burrito layer of beef, but you got one or two layers in there. Right. And you can. So anyway, all that to say, I think Michael K. Williams beats Jonathan here and probably goes over even John Malkovich.
All right. Well, we're debating. To the top or
to
not.
The top.
So to the top. Yes, with both
to the
of
top.
Them. Jude Law as Sam in The Third Day.
Man, like, I almost want to say it's float worthy, but arguably he does a lot more better work in this than he did The New Pope.
Yeah, there's a lot of strong emotional work here. The series revolves around the death of his son. And the implications of that and the history and the future of that and this weird island that he's on. And like the parts where, you know, he's seeing his kid in the grass or whatever and chasing him through and just ends up, you know, in the middle of this tall grass, just like weeping, or like the confusion that he displays when he's being like gaslighted by the entire fucking island, right? There's a lot of good work there, and it's strong, it's powerful stuff.
On the other hand, did he ever square off against God Almighty to pray over a boy racked with birth defects to make him whole for like a whole solid night? Like some of that stuff where like Lenny was literally in the sense of like Israel of old wrestling with God was
shouting at him, you know?
Yeah, like it's like powerful and like an old school shamanesque like Renaissance painting kind of way, like the passion of the Lenny here.
But did Lenny ever dig his own grave for an hour and a half live
and,
on
and
camera?
Also did also you know, Sam didn't spend literally 2/3 of his own season. He didn't spend 2 of the 3 days asleep in a coma.
Right, so. Right. He had a little more to do, but it was only 3 episodes, right? So like and a 24-hour live stream. So it was like 27 hours of content.
Yeah. But then again, you know, Pope Lenny might have solved religious radicalism mm-hmm. in his time.
You put Pope Lenny on that island. That religion is going to, they're going to come together and they're going to be worshiping the one true God.
You know? It's going to, or he'll march all 1 billion Catholics into that island and declare martial law. The new Pope goes places, what I'm trying to say. And so does the third day. I'm leaning float, but I might be looking ahead to the end game too much. Maybe we put him to the top.
God, I feel like everything's just going to go to the top. We got to have some standards, but Jude Law meets that standard.
Well, here we go.
All right, I've got two standards here. These two guys, Carl Urban as Billy Butcher and Anthony Starr as Homelander from The Boys Season 2, both of these guys need to go to the top. I think we can float the other two. After all, both of those other two are supporting characters. Mother's Milk has some good stuff that I really like.
That's what I'm saying. But it's minor. Giancarlo Esposito, and Giancarlo Esposito is pitching like the fastest Gus Fring fastball that he's pitched since season 4 of Breaking Bad, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And that's a pretty good pitch.
Yeah, but it's not as good as Carl Urban or Anthony Starr. I mean, their pitches. I still remember the shot. Like, I can see in my head the shot of him, you know, over his spoilers for The Boys Season 2, if you haven't watched it. Spoilers for all these shows, because that's just what we do here. I still, in my mind, can see the shot of him turning toward Homelander as his wife is laying there dead, right? And like that whole sequence, that look that he gives is just astonishing. I've never seen anything like it on film.
Butcher might kill a child here with a tire iron.
He's looking over at his son like he's gonna murder him, and then Homelander flies in and he's looking at him the same way. It's like to now protect the son that just accidentally murdered his wife. It's a wild ride, and Carl Urban just makes me feel every second of it.
Yeah, I feel like that there's a whole, this whole year was kind of like, or this whole season was like him building up to those moments, because, you know, there's so many different looks. It's like the sip of tea, the murderous turn with tire iron in hand, like, I remember there's a scene with him and his wife where his wife's trying to pin him on, like, you know, making a promise, you know, swearing on your brother's soul or on your brother's grave, something. And like you could see without any kind of words exchanging, like what a real horn of a dilemma that put Billy in, because there was no way, there's no way to get out with everything that he wanted in that moment, you know? And the thing is like, yeah, Carl Urban is like, yeah, I watched him in the Lord of the Rings series, because we just recently rewatched all that for Commission Podcast. And I saw him in something. What else did I see? Oh, I saw him in Judge Dredd. I went through a little bit of Carl Urban Renaissance after The Boys. And he has been working on this like stoic, like look based acting from the jump. And it all culminates in here. And it's not a broad range, although he does go through a lot of the human emotion. But it is a particular depth of this particular palette. Like, how many shades of red can you have in just like murderous rage? You know?
Yeah.
A lot. And Anthony Starr.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, it's the thing I appreciate about Anthony Starr is he just doesn't give a fuck. You know, he might make out with his doppelganger. He might fuck his doppelganger. He might murder his doppelganger. He might side with Nazis in neo-Nazis and kind of like a real politic way, but also have a moment where it's like, oh, wait, shit, these Nazis are fucking crazy. And it's all believable.
He might jerk himself a glass of breast milk.
He might, have a really complicated relationship with motherhood and breast milk, and might jerk it at the top of the Empire State Building, because who's going to stop him? He's Superman. He just is like...
He's incredible.
And I can't think of anybody else to play these two. That's the other thing. Is you go back, you go through your, replacement, value over replacement average, and, these guys are just off the charts. I mean, there's
especially
probably people that could,
Anthony Starr. Like, I just can't imagine anybody else pulling this off with that. I don't know. He's got, those quote unquote all American looks. He's got the blonde hair and the icy blue eyes and that force the painted on smile when he needs it. Mm-hmm. And then just the painted on smile to the immediate frown, the way he turns emotionally on a dime. To me, is one of the best parts of this portrayal, and it's absolutely necessary for that character.
A psychotic Superman is one of the most frightening things you can think of, and this show just really brings. And he's never like a cartoon; you take him seriously as a character. And there's a lot of points where I really didn't know what he was going to do, because there is a wounded boy. There is still a core of kind of goodness, a guy who wants to be good that's buried in there somewhere, and sometimes that flashes out, especially. In his relationship with the son, it's a hell of a performance.
Yeah, I look at a lot of those moments with Stormfront, and I go, okay, there's a lot more depth to this performance than you might think, right? It could just be the guy who's a psychopath pretending to be this hero. But then there's, like you mentioned, the vulnerable aspects of him, right? And when you can dig past the surface, like I think Stormfront did a couple of times, and sort of, get inside of his head and sort of twist him up, like Madeline was able to, like Stormfront does. Those are the moments where you see a broader range from that character and from that actor. And I think he probably even more so than Carl Urban, I was impressed with his work in Boys Season 2. Yeah.
I will say for Giancarlo, there's a couple scenes where he just stands up and takes off his glasses and then intimidates this psychotic Superman. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In a completely believable way. He puts him on his back heels and you're like, okay, that's about right. I don't know that there's a lot of people that could do that as well. And also I thought something that really I found impressive late season when he's talking with Butcher. And he talks about why he's so buttoned down and cool. And he says engaging and screaming and letting my anger get the better of me. That's a white man's affectation. And really put some fucking heat behind it. Cause John Carroll is pretty outspoken in social media and in the media in general about where he stands on race and gender and, you got a little bit of glimpse of his genuine anger and frustration, pretty good. But I also was a little bit surprised at how little he was a part of season two. I thought that he was, and it turns out he is kind of remained a supporting background character, and that I think is going to hurt you into Baldies for sure.
Yeah, we haven't talked a lot about Mother's Milk, but that's also somewhat of a supporting role. It's a bigger role, I think, than Stan Edgar.
He's a glue. He's the glue of the team.
He is.
When the team wants to fracture apart, he's the one that through the force of, he's the big brother of the group, or maybe the group's dad. Butcher likes to swagger in and says, daddy's home. But Mother's Milk is the guy that sits you down and says, fucking stop your shit or keep doing your shit because the team needs this particular shit that you're doing. Yeah. But without him, the boys would have flung apart three separate times this season. Mm-hmm. But again, glue is not, doesn't tend to get as much. Like I said, he
glue
had some really
stick
great
to
stuff.
The top of this list.
Glue doesn't stick to the top. So that's what I'm saying. Are we to the top with Carl and Anthony and we're floating Laz and Giancarlo?
I think so. Sorry, guys, but yeah. Maybe they'll do more with them next season.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers have a chance to exercise their rights under the Patreon pact we've made by voting for the next pulp movie that Jim and I will be covering. If you're one of the elite few backers at the executive producer level, don't miss your chance to influence us. Hurry over to patreon.com/baldmove and vote in the latest movie poll before it closes on Wednesday morning.
And for all other club members, we've got an all-new episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron this Friday afternoon. Catch the live stream at 1 p.m. to interact with us and your fellow munchers over on Patreon, or you can wait for the podcast to drop later that day.
If you want even more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly Lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
All right, Nick Offerman as Forrest on Devs.
To the bottom.
Wow. Fuck him. Wow. I thought you liked Nick Offerman.
I do, but man, I'm having a hard time doing anything but float.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't say throw him to the bottom, but to the top is too much. It's good.
He surprised me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of the moments where he's alone, like watching his daughter on that screen got to me. The flashback see, well, if anything, is actually a flashback in the show. The moment we see of his wife's accident, that was very powerful. And his acting was a big part of why it was.
I've seen him on stuff that I've taken serious before, but he's always been kind of been the goofball even then, like in Fargo. That's a serious, I mean, I guess it's a borderline serious show, but yeah, it's a serious drama. But he's kind of the goofball, quirky character among it. Trying to think if I've ever seen him in just a stone cold, sober, dramatic role. And I think this might be the first one. And he really showed flashes of greatness. Again, he's kind of a supporting character. The show's not about him. He's the primary antagonist, I think. But even then, it's like, what does that even mean in the context of that show? Right. I think he's a floater, which means he's probably as closest to the bottom as this list is going to get.
Ed Harris as Old William in Westworld Season 3.
Here's the thing. These next two, Ed Harris and Aaron Paul.
Okay. As Caleb Nichols in Westworld Season 3, yeah.
They're borderline to the top / float because Aaron Paul especially, wasn't, I mean, he wasn't asked to do anything but be an everyman.
Yeah, that's the problem. I don't think Aaron Paul's performances have stood out since Breaking Bad. And in Breaking Bad, you know, he had a transformation over the course of X number of seasons. That was the impressive part. Yeah. And he was great. He did the job. But I feel like since then they've just wanted like Aaron Paul to show up because Aaron Paul was that guy on Breaking Bad, you know? And this is a little more, but not much.
Yeah, you don't have to, like, every damn role you play doesn't have to be, you know, not everybody has to be Daniel Day-Lewis, like, every single thing. Right. It's like, oh, my God, what a sometimes you just got to work. And I think I like seeing Aaron Paul work, but the Caleb wasn't very flashy or splashy or Ed Harris. I don't even know that. There's some good stuff, some showcase stuff, like him arguing the past, present, and future versions of himself, and some of the complex mental games they were playing. Inherently interesting, mm-hmm. but also he wasn't a central figure in this season. Or I guess was he?
Yeah.
I guess he
pretty
was.
Central.
Yeah. As central as anyone else you can name. Any of the Dolores shards and
yeah, I mean his whole arc was like going to the mental asylum, right? The facility that he got forced into, and then trying to get out of that. I don't know. The company takeover was the whole thing this season.
The thing is like this whole season he played like diluted Buzz Lightyear. He was still playing the old game. He hadn't quite come to grips with the new game and how far along the new game was gone. And like, I think the way I'm trying to, I know we talk about spoilers, but I try not to spoil just for the spoiler's sake. But like the end game of his character in Westworld season 3 was kind of like the epitome of him being this poor, deluded old man.
Yeah, for sure.
But I'm thinking real like this real float worthy.
Yeah, I'd float both of these. All right, let's move on to the Fargo season 4 crew. Chris Rock as Loy Cannon and Ben Whishaw as Rabbi Milligan.
I like Chris Rock's performance. Of the two comedic characters that had gangster roles, I think he came off looking way better.
Than Jason Schwartzman
than Jason Schwartzman, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I agree, but I don't think either of them hit like truly great. I think there's something about Chris Rock's demeanor that just didn't fit this role exactly. And I think that's what, you know, Holly was going for when he cast Chris Rock, something a little outside of the box, something surprising. And you get a lot of surprising stuff out of Chris Rock that you weren't sure was there before. So, you know, good job on that. I just think something didn't quite connect with, you know, him or Schwartzman. I mean, sure. I think Chris Rock was clearly better than Schwartzman, but yeah, like, I'm with you on that.
The standout for me for Chris Rock was when he shook down Ben Whishaw as Rabbi Milligan. Like the first time I actually saw him as menacing, his explosive takedown of his wife and mother-in-law. You know, the loss of his son and then the miraculous reattainment of his son. Like, I thought those are excellent performances. Him just like we talked about this, that bone weariness that he felt when he saw the billboard extolling his idea for credit cards that was stolen from, you know, the banking community. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of little stuff he did. I think. I'm leaning towards to the top because floating like doesn't do like I think this is better than anything that like Nick, Ed or Aaron was doing. But like sitting to the top is like, you know, that does he make it into the top 10? I don't know. But
OK,
I feel like I don't know. Maybe it's a little dismissive to say he's just float worthy. Ben Whishaw, on the other hand, did everything you could ask for what little he was given. It's just he was given so
that's
little.
That's the problem. Yeah. Yeah, he had a couple of big episodes. He would appear in pretty much every episode, I think, except he was the straight man in this tornado of chaos, right? Like,
I was gonna say he was the co-lead in the showcase Wizard of Oz episode.
Yeah, that was his big showcase. But the rest of the satchel. Season, he was just kind of, you know, there for a scene or two. And
that's another thing, you could almost throw the kid that played Satchel in here, except for that he wasn't required to do much with that role. You know,
not at all. He had one speech.
Right.
In the entire show, maybe?
I want you to do your entire performance of this entire season like you are wearing a literal wet blanket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
be
just like
the wet blanket.
Be the wet blanket. And yeah, the one time he kind of came alive is when he kind of started Mike Milliganing and he pulled the gun on those rednecks that tried to pull a fucking Lovecraft country on him. But yeah, I'd send Rock to the top and Ben Whishaw. I nod at you. I see what you're doing there. I wish this season was two more episodes and they got to give some of these side characters justice, but that's not what happened.
I wish I saw Whishaw do more.
Whishaw.
All right.
How much wish can a Whishaw saw if a Whishaw could saw wish?
These next three, I don't have a lot of context on because I've seen one episode of The Plot Against America.
Ah,
but we're going to be talking about
these are okay.
Morgan Spector is Herman Levin, John Turturro is Rabbi Bingelsdorf, and Anthony Boyle as Alvin Levin.
Yeah. The problem is like this happens, with a lot of David Simon stuff where it's a huge ensemble cast and, they all were excellent, but, you know, Herman Levin is essentially a Jewish everyman. You're supposed to identify as him as a father. Like, oh my God, what would I do? What would I do in a situation where America seems like it's descending into fascism and I am one of the vulnerable, you know, I am a minority of concern. You know, what would I do with my family? What would I do with my neighbors? You know, who, and like, he's very good at it, but like, also, there's not a lot of flash here. John Turturro is playing an evil Buzz Lightyear. He's just fully fucking deluded about the state of America. And like, you're never quite sure if he's like doing this for personal power. He's a true believer. He's got a different set of facts and experiences he's arguing from. But yeah, he's deeply deluded about till the very end about what the state he's living in. And Anthony Boyle is like this very angry, jaded character who is like too young to really have any shot at effectively wielding power. Is busting to do something and goes to Canada because Canada joins in World War II against the Nazi regime. America stays neutral, goes to Canada to enlist. Ends up losing a leg and getting no glory out of it. And I think he's the best one out of all these three. He probably goes to the top. Yeah, I think he goes to the top. Everybody else, you're a great foundation of this great morality play that David Simon threw for 21st century America, looking back to mid 20th century America. But yeah.
Oh my God, we forgot the supporting actors. In Fargo season 4, Francesco Acquaroli as Abel Violante.
I think we didn't forget him. We initially said, hey, you know, because we had so many people, we're going to not do side care. And then we started having more. And I'm like, you know what? These guys, we got to talk about them, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're great. And of course, Glenn Turman is Dr. Senator. He's fantastic. Well, probably my favorite character in the entire show.
By far the best acting on Fargo. I think he needs to go to the top, even though he's a supporting character. He probably won't make it. Glenn Turman was electric as Dr. Senator in Fargo season 4. Yeah. And the show, man, it's one of those things where it's like the show wrote a check that its ass couldn't cash. It's like,
sure.
what if Ned Stark gets beheaded and then Game of Thrones just never can quite get it together after his absence? Like, Dr. Senator was real good. And the thing is, you know, the Francesco Acquaroli that played the evil character was his acting partner.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of what Dr. Senator did worked because he had a really good person on the other side of the table, literally. But
yeah, I wish Dr. Cinder had stuck around longer in that show, because I was not done with him. The show was done with him before I was. And yeah, they had Ebel be kind of a much bigger part of that show by the end. And I liked that turn. And I think that Francesco pulled it off. Came across as very menacing at the end of that.
Almost too much. Like that wasn't the first time I remember complaining that like the morality play nature of this season got in the way of like good characters and storytelling. Like they needed Ebel to turn, like, you know, make an Anakin Skywalker turn where it's like, oh, this is a guy who's, you know, kind of like for good governance as far as gangster stuff. And then by the end, but I guess it was also kind of understandable because he is a gangster. He did have a hand that had unlimited power, and he was arguably being good to the cannons by allowing them to keep half of what they had. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it left a bad taste in my mouth.
Okay.
He floats.
Leave him where he is. The Good Lord Bird had a couple. Ethan Hawke as John Brown and Joshua Caleb Johnson as Onion.
I wish I had finished this season because, again, Ethan Hawke is pretty incredible, and it's a role that requires him to be generous. He gets to be the kind of crazy man who's always brought up short by other supporting characters. You know, you go through these casts of like Frederick Douglass and Sojourner Truth. Damn it. Great ally Aaron. Can't think of the Harriet Tubman. Great black figure that's on the show. Like his role is to be the overzealous kind of white guy who the other like former slaves and free slaves, like, I don't know, you might get us all killed. And he's, you know, he looks terrible. He's unkempt. He doesn't brush his teeth. He lives as a crazy frontier man. And like I said, he's the kind of the butt of all the show's jokes while also recognizing kind of like, you know, his singular role of being the guy crazy enough to want blood for what this country was doing. So I don't know. He gets to yell and scream a lot. It's like the best thing I've seen him done in years. I guess it's to the top. I mean, but that it's weird because like I'm the only one that's seen it. I haven't even seen the last two episodes. Everyone says it ends amazing, but I'm going to have a hard time getting this guy into the top 10 just because I haven't seen it. Now,
what about Onion?
Joshua Caleb Johnson as Onion is also a really interesting character, and he gets to do a lot of interesting work as a young boy who's mistaken as a girl and is forced to live as a girl through most of the series. And he's a teenage boy, and he's, you know, as horny as most. And but again, I haven't seen the whole thing. And he's like he reminds me a lot of who was that character, Ethel Rita in Fargo, where ostensibly he's the main character. He's the narrator. All the action pivots around him, but it's also not their story, you know? So I feel like he's a floater and Ethan Hawke is to the topper, but he's going to probably get handily beaten out of that spot.
Okay. To the top. All right. Next up, Mark Prosh as Colin Robinson in What We Do in the Shadows, and Matt Berry as Laszlo in What We Do in the Shadows.
You gentlemen are in a comedy show, so best of luck, but to the top!
Whoa.
To the top!
Oh, okay.
You can't get much better in a comedy lead than these guys.
It's true.
A comedy lead, comedy support, because I think Colin, you know, even though he had an episode all about him this season, is firmly in the supporting cast. God, these guys are just funny as hell in completely different ways.
Oh, yeah, they couldn't be more different.
Like, why is Matt Berry funny? Like, it's kind of like trying to say, like, why?
Because his confidence and the way about him don't, or his confidence and his competence don't match up. I think is one of the reasons why he's so funny. He's extremely confident in everything he does, and he has this grandiose way of presenting himself. and yet he's a buffoon in most regards.
Yeah, kind of like a European Bill Murray is kind of how he, because like that, there's a lot of like, why is Bill Murray funny? Uh-huh. He's been in a lot of funny things, sure, but why is he in almost intrinsically funny?
He can deadpan a line, I know that much, but Matt Berry never deadpans.
No, you're right. They're not, but it's the same kind of thing. It's like, it's really hard to pin down what about them is working.
Yeah.
But you're right. There is something about the mismatch between how confident and competent he is and or thinks he is versus the reality of his existence.
Right. And he's usually the butt of the joke where, you know, characters who are actually competent will shit all over him. And he's sort of, he's not oblivious to that fact, but also he doesn't get him down. You know, he keeps trucking along.
He's also got kind of like that likable rascal role, yes, where it's like, you know, he's not an Always Sunny character where like he's just so bad that I want to see him defeated. I was like, no, I kind of like want him and Nadja to be happy out of all the primary cast. Whereas Colin, yeah, he's more of an Always Sunny guy where it's like the only time the show lifts him up is to smack him down so the audience can enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
It's very funny as this emotional vampire that just sucks. Like, he doesn't suck your blood, he just sucks your will to live. He's the guy that just as you get rolling on your spreadsheet comes over and sticks his head into your cubicle to bore you about stupid shit, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would also say that Matt Berry always plays extremely horny characters, and
yeah,
he's not a bad looking guy. He's just like, he's kind of just like an average looking dude who presents himself as like the sex god sort of thing, which I have to doubt because of the other aspects of his life I've seen, but I don't know. Nadja just seems to like him. So
that's the thing. It's like, that's perfect. Like the episode where they're getting ready for the vampire orgy, mm-hmm, and Laszlo and the other guys are like, oh, it's this epic days of nonstop fucking and it's all these sexual, and then they smash cut to Nadja and she's like, it's all right.
Yeah.
Like I think that's like perfectly nails that kind of Jack Blackian energy he has.
Yeah,
he's really fun. These guys are funny. This show is super funny. It's got like it does mostly avoid the Always Sunny trap of like, you know, the characters are just these crash test dummies that you want to see thrown through windshields and brick walls, because I do care about a few of them. But God, it's good. It's a good, funny show about vampires sucking people's blood I've ever seen.
For sure. How about The Expanse, if we talk about Wes Chatham as Amos Burton, Keon Alexander as Marco Inaros, and Josiah Jace Owens as Philip Inaros.
Okay, here's another one we have not seen. Like, by the time the Baldi's ceremony airs, I believe we'll have seen the entire thing, but the qualifier to Baldi's, you just have to premiere, mm-hmm, in 2020.
And we have seen of the 10 episodes so far.
Wes Chatham has had a real showcase season. Like, Amos is for the first time kind of been carrying A plots all by himself and doing a really good job. Like,
yeah,
this season has done more for me to like really crystallize how I feel about Amos and kind of like, you know, see different sides of him than any other. I think he goes to the top. And I kind of could make an argument for Josiah Chase Owens. Keon Alexander, maybe he's just too good at being this bastard, but I fucking hate this guy.
Yeah, this guy, you're definitely supposed to.
He's almost, you know, he's not quite the Joffrey levels, but I know he's one of those things where it's like, you could probably make an objective argument. I mean, how many people did Joffrey kill anyway? Marco is unprecedented in his monstrosity throughout the entire, like, they make that a point even in 24th century, he's heinous by human standards, mm-hmm, like apex terrorist. What do you think?
Let's throw them up there. Let's just throw them all up there and see where they shake out.
Okay,
Because I,
the thing is, like, also Josiah, like, his best work is done blubbering in the face of Dominic Tripper, who is doing the real fucking heavy
monster,
lifting.
A beast this season, I think. But
and just like his eyes watering while his father's berating him, like he is doing good reacting work. But I don't know. You could almost say the same thing about Aaron Paul on Breaking Bad. Except for if Josiah has in the next season like a like a whole arc of him doing therapy where he talks about this away from like that, then maybe. But
We forgot one. Oops. Brent Sexton as Sin on The Expanse season 5.
Can you give a man a baldy for a singular line reading? Because
right. Yeah,
his, where he confesses, "I love all of us. We were a family." Breaks me every fucking time.
Oh,
like,
that's the one?
Undisputed. Yeah, that line where he just like Naomi says, "I thought you loved me," and he says, "I loved all of us. We were a family." God damn it! Yep. It's all getting to me just now.
yeah, the one I like is, you know, right before that. It's the same scene. It's where he actually confesses. You know, I says I knew where he was.
Yeah.
The whole time that's
felt real.
Yeah.
All this stuff feels like, you know, like everything he did leading up to it, like the way he acted is very, very, you know, because I've never had this kind of confession, but I've made confessions like this and I've had confessions like this made me like the taking a deep breath before you plunge off the side. Like everything that he did was so smart and so nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
But he is such a small character. Yeah. I do want to say, yeah, this is one like a top five scene of the year. And mm-hmm. he was a big part of what made it work. Cause like Dominic Tripper is a acting beast, but you got to have somebody on the other end for any of this stuff to connect.
But I just don't think he can go to the top because he has such a minor role in that season.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Nicholas Holt as Peter the Third in The Great. I haven't seen this.
Send him to the bottom. Send him to the bottom. Oh, he's a worthless bum. He's a piece of trash. Oh, okay. Well, then maybe float him.
There we go. He's gone. He's floating in the ether. No, he's at the bottom. But
I got to say, like, I think he needs to go to the top because imagine Joffrey Baratheon, except you can't quite help liking the guy. And that's Peter the
Except
Third.
Except he is actually charming.
Yeah, he really is. He really is. Like, he plausibly wins over Catherine the Great at some point in this season. I don't know. There's like, there's something to it. There's something to it. Like, if Joffrey was had moments of self-awareness, like, you know what? This isn't who I want to be. I probably should pay more attention and tried to. That's a very hard, like, he's a really heinous person, but he has some kind of likability to him. And it's not just because he's good looking and whatnot. There is some kind of, and I guess I've never seen Nicholas Holt in that kind of a shirt of a role. He's always played kind of like, you know, the beast in X-Men where he's, got a big insecurity or whatnot. This guy is many things, but like insecure. I don't know. I think he actually goes to the top. He's not gonna, you know, it's a comedic role, but he's real good in it. And I love The Great, man. I love The Great so much. Thank God for The Great coming along just as Harlots fell completely off the map. I'm glad I got a new trashy historical rom com thing to get into on Hulu. All right.
So now, as I see it, we have to debate.
We're an hour into this thing and top 17. Just sent to the top and gone to the bottom.
Yeah, it's a long list.
Well, let's just fuck it. Let's just go from the top and work our way to the bottom. Is Wes Chatham better than Nicholas Holt? I say yes. You're going to say yes.
Sure, because I haven't seen Nicholas Holt. So, OK, to the top him. Are we doing top again?
No, we're just now it's just who's better or who's worse. And is Keon Alexander as Marco Inaros better than Nicholas Holt as Peter the Third? I say no, but it might only be because I just really fucking hate Marco Inaros.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
He just is the worst.
Yeah.
He abuses everyone. He's a multi-million murderer. His politics are garbage. And what's worse, he's kind of got a point. He's kind of also got a fucking point, so fuck him especially. Yeah.
And he's able to convey it very charismatically as well. He's a good looking man, right? Like, he's got all those advantages that make you want to say, are the things he's doing really so bad? Well, yeah, they are, but he's just a handsome guy.
He seems so noble. He's got his visage is so noble.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think he's better. Now, the work that Philip is doing better than what Marco is doing with the Expanse? Just to say, Chase better than his dad. And
God damn,
I have a hard time saying better.
If it's better, shockingly it's good. Slightly better, but it's very different.
He's shockingly good for, I think he's 20 years old, so he's not even that young, but he's like, you know, shockingly good work for a young actor. Got my eye on him going forward, but I don't know if he's better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think either of those guys are going to make top 10, frankly.
Okay, question.
I'm not too, yeah.
Is Colin and Laszlo from What We Do in the Shadows better than Marco and Philip and Aros?
God damn.
And I kind of think they are. Even accounting for comedy versus drama, I think what they're doing is singularly brilliant versus these other guys. Like, I they're not doing anything that I don't see anyone else could do.
Yeah, I mean, I literally don't know that anyone else could do what Mark and Matt are doing, because they are playing Mark and Matt characters, right? Like, I've seen the character Colin Robinson in everything that guy's ever done. I've seen Laszlo in everything Matt Berry's ever done. It's not outside. It's very much in their wheelhouse. It's
This could be a Will Ferrell situation before we've seen him do it 10, 12 times and gotten to say it like, you know.
Right. This might be Matt Berry's old school, Mark Proch's old school, where that's like the demarcating line for me, where I liked Will Ferrell in that. Everything beyond, I'm like, I start to get less and less interested.
But yeah, I think if for me, it's easy. Like, I think they're better than both these guys.
Okay. Yeah, they haven't crossed over to annoyingly that character yet. So that's where I want to put him. But I don't know about this dude. So
no, I think he's better. I think they're better. But on the other hand, like I said, it's very hard to play Joffrey that's still likable. And that seems to be a pretty good analogy that people are kind of like, oh, yeah, that's. Ethan Hawke, I actually think he's the best of this bunch so far. I take him all the way to the top. He's got better material. He's gets to scream red face, but also be like apologetic and deferential. Like, you know, it's a solid Ethan Hawke role. Here we go. Glenn Turman. To the top. Who's the stopper? Who's the combo breaker?
There isn't one. I haven't seen Good Lord Bird, and I haven't seen The Great, but I would say probably better than West Chatham. Maybe just because I've seen so many seasons of The Expanse at this point. And I've seen Glenn Turman in other things, certainly. But I really enjoyed his performance here, and it had been a while since I had really noticed him in anything. I don't think Amos Burton is that hard of a character to play. It doesn't require any range. It requires exactly one emotion, which is indifference. Occasionally he expands out to slightly more haunted indifference. Like, you know, there are moments with that character where he has like, you know, some fatherly instincts or brotherly instincts maybe that kick in, and you see like a little bit of an actual character coming through. But I mean, his whole character is calm, cool, vaguely sociopathic.
Just badass.
Yeah.
It's all he has to be. And cool and badass. And if he can get some vulnerability in there every once in a while, more power to him.
And I've seen Wes in like interviews and stuff. I know he's not that guy. Obviously, he is acting, but like, it's not a broad range of stuff he's asked to do. I wouldn't say Glenn Turman is super broad here, but like the way he pulls this off so effortlessly, there's this smooth.
Well, you're putting him under Ethan, because I was suggesting over.
Oh, okay. Then yeah, let's do it. I haven't even seen Ethan Hawke.
He's tippy top so far. The best and I'm trying to go like best singular performance, and also you have to be if I didn't put any kind of previsos on here, then I think that Brent Saxton as Sin is just going to fucking win it, because like that's recency bias and is a monster scene, but like you have to be a big structural part of the show, and Glenn Turman I think gets there by a toe. Because he is the best part of the first half of Fargo season 4, which is probably the best part of Fargo.
Sure.
All right. Sure. Let's keep going. Anthony Boyle as Alvin Lynn. I know you haven't seen all of this.
Hmm.
I have a hard time getting him above. There's a soft speed bump here at Nicholas Holt, and there's a hard speed bump at Ethan Hawke.
What? Okay, how much momentum does he have?
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Man. You know what?
I love this. A character from a show I haven't seen has a speed bump at a show I haven't seen and another one at a show I haven't seen.
I know. It's tough. I don't know what to do about it.
This is the Aaron show right here. It's all up to you.
I think he's I think he can't get over 6.
Okay,
but he's better than the Expanse father and son duo here.
So he's 7.
Yeah.
Chris Rock as Loy Cannon. Whew. He's a much bigger part of the season than Glenn Turman.
I mean, arguably, he's better than Wes, but he cannot get over the like I think the truly elite is starting to is at the Glenn Ethan level, and he's just not. And it's a damn shame that comedy doesn't get counted as truly elite, because I think Barry and Proshk would be there too, but I think he's better than Wes Chatham because of material.
I mean, but Wes Chatham does exactly what he needs. He embodies that role perfectly.
Yeah.
Whereas Chris Rock is a little shaky in scenes. I think
okay, you talked me into it.
I think it's a bigger, meatier kind of role to sink your teeth into emotionally, but he doesn't quite pull it off to
bigger,
me.
Bigger and meatier than Amos? I don't know.
Fair.
He's the BMT of the Expanse universe. Bigger, meatier, tastier.
Oh, fuck me.
Oh, my God. These guys.
Monsters in this category, in my opinion. I think Anthony Starr needs to go to number one right now.
I kind of think they both go to the top.
Okay, and they're gonna have to fight it out.
Maybe you could split Anthony. Maybe you could split Anthony and put him below Glenn Turman.
Really?
I'm sorry, you could pit. Okay. No. I'm sorry, okay. Carl. Billy Butcher. I got Billy and Anthony. Maybe you put Butcher below Glenn Turman.
Let's do it for now and see how it feels when we get back top of this list.
Yeah.
Just for expediency's sake, Jude Law, Sam, the third day.
I mean, yeah, he goes pretty far to the top. This is a Baldy performance if ever I've seen one.
I don't know how much you want to weight the work he did on the 24-hour live stream, because that's the stuff that I'm even more impressed by.
That's all you, because they did, boy, with the stuff they did with the saturation and color palette and visual storytelling, mm-hmm. really elevated all of Jude Law's already impressive tool set. I could put him to the top, because I do think he is in the elite class, or you could put him in the bottom of the elite. Are we saying Ethan is the floor of the elite, or are we putting Wes Chatham in there?
Ethan's probably the floor of the elite here. I feel like I want to just throw him in right there.
Ooh,
but again, I haven't seen The Good Lord Burt, so.
Oh, I mean, I guess I so you don't think he should go number two?
I think there's something to talk about there, but.
So I think he's better than Carl Urban for sure. I'm not sure if he's better than Dr. Senator. And the thing is, he only had three episodes. I'm judging him on three episodes, and that's about what I'm judging Glenn Turman on.
Yeah,
didn't see the 24-hour special that's something. If you some of the shit you described that he went through is Herculean and Sisyphean, a Greek wild. Fucking tragedy.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Where did I describe that? Was it in the best show?
You probably did it in the best show.
Biggest miss. Yeah, I don't know what it was, but yeah, I've talked about the third day and specifically that 24-hour live stream.
Maybe it was the biggest surprise.
Yes, I think you're right. So go listen to that if you want to hear a lot of talk about that. Although I have a feeling we're going to come back to this and have to really dig into the nitty-gritty on these guys. So, all right. Where does that leave us? Oh, Michael K. Williams as Montrose Freeman. Man, I'm going pretty high on this one. I think he beats Glenn Turman for sure.
I was thinking three or four.
God, why not two? Knocked out of the top 10 before this is over, I swear.
Oh, no, what's your argument for him not being better than Jude Law?
I don't have a great one.
Yeah, mine's this visceral, Lovecraft Country was a little pulpy. But the third day is about weird religious cults on islands and shit. How is that less? I guess because it didn't have the actual Lovecraftian. This is just all crazy people being crazy people. It wasn't supernatural, otherworldly.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, Jude Law gets the bump for that 24-hour live stream.
Oh, that's true. Michael K. Williams didn't dig a hole in the mud for 4 hours or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, I'm sure there were grueling days on set, but nothing like going to the rainiest ass British Isle you've ever seen and being stuck there digging holes and standing on poles and dragging boats for 24 hours.
Digging holes and standing on poles. The Jude Law story. All right, what are we doing? What are we doing?
It's somewhere in here. It's either.
Okay. Yeah, I think 3 and 4 is a tough argument.
Okay, Jonathan Majors as Atticus Freeman in Lovecraft Country. Again, I'm not sure he was quite as good as Michael K. Williams.
I think he's right there in the like 10-11 zone. In the outstanding comedic, like he's like he is a good performance and a solid draw. But like, not sure if it's better than the elite comedic performances, because like, I guess we got like an elite acting overall and then elite comedic. And, you know. But I don't know, because like, I feel like some of these like people are going to be like, well, you forgot about such and such a scene, because I know he had really good material with Michael K. Williams.
Yeah, that episode where they travel back in time.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was powerful, and powerful because we perceived it through Major's reaction to it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like I said, I think he's in the 4, 5, 6 range. He's definitely above Wes Chatham.
Okay.
How much higher he rolls, I don't know.
Let's put him in there for now. Let's see where this ends up.
Yep. Okay.
Oh, come on. Come on, Jude.
This is bullshit.
You're just stacking the fucking deck here. Here.
I like.
There we go.
Oh, you're going to do this bullshit?
I'm just lumping him in.
Oh, man. Scandal.
And you know what?
Here. Wait. Gun to your head. And I know you didn't see the last episode, The Young Pope or The New Pope for some fucking reason. Gun to your head, Jude Law in Third Day or Jude Law in New Pope?
Fuck. If this was Jude Law in Young Pope and Jude Law in Third Day, it's probably Young Pope. In New Pope, since he's in a coma for 70% of that season, it's probably Third Day Jude Law.
He's still doing visions and shit when he's in a coma, to be fair.
Okay. It's true every once in a while. And he's in that intro, that outstanding intro.
Yeah, there's a lot of pretty women in that intro, and they almost all combine equal one Jude Law ass.
Right. One cheek on the Young Pope.
I mean, he's a sexy man. This is a sexy show. Like,
yeah. I don't know, man.
I like Jude Law and New Pope better than Jude Law and Third Day, but man, I don't know. That's like, God damn it. How do you compare New Pope with the fucking Boys?
I know.
Like,
man.
They're both completely ridiculous and gonzo, but in very different ways.
Yeah, I wish they had not done that 24-hour live stream on the Third Day, because that's fucking with me. That's just like
muddies the waters. Yeah, it's such a stunt.
Yeah, it's just a thing that I had never seen before. It's so surprising that I just want to give it the nod over most things. But
yeah, it's like, if it's like a David Blaine trick, it's like, well, he's put on his great or performance, and also he did it all while he's encased in a block of ice,
right,
suspended for 7 days above the Las Vegas Strip. It's like,
and he really
what?
Did it. Yeah, it's like,
yeah, I mean, it's one thing to act that well, but oh my god.
I mean, and frankly, at the end of that 24-hour live stream, it's one thing to act at all. Like, the idea that you could act for 24 hours at such high levels,
you only get the one. Yeah, you have to always be in character. You never get Yeah, it's a.
You do get some time off. Like I get that there's like downtime, and they're probably icing him up and giving him shoulder massages, you know, after he digs his own grave for like the next 4 hours while he's off screen.
Hand transplants because his he's worn his hands down to the pulp digging a hole. I mean, like I said, I think I like the new Pope better. I don't think. Oh God, but is the new? That's the thing, like. I don't know that, man, I don't know he's the best performance of the year.
No, I just put him up there so we can talk about him.
I kind of think, yeah. Do you want to leave him here and just move on?
Yeah.
Like I was agonizing 15 minutes over like where someone's position should be. It's currently at 15 or 16. So like, maybe we should keep going. John Malkovich, no, fuck me. okay, he's somewhere in the Glenn Turman through Ethan Hawke level.
Huh, okay.
Not even as good a Pope on the Pope season that was his season. The frustrating Pope.
Put him in there. Seems like he's going to hit top 10 because I think the last person we really need to talk about is Silvio, and the rest of them are.
I don't know what to do with this guy.
Off
dude.
The map.
I don't. This guy is a delight. He's amazing. He's very much of the show. I've never seen him in anything. I've heard he's an Italian actor of some renown.
He is kind of. In some way, he is the church to me. He's the institutional church in this show, and he does a great job of.
He's Mitch McConnell.
yeah. He just does this great job of like portraying the unshakable, roots that have been put down over centuries.
Yeah.
When you're faced with a couple of popes who are looking to turn, to flip the table, right? Shake things up. I don't know. The way he is like that. I don't even know how to describe it. It's the force that he brings to this role is pretty astounding.
He's the man behind the throne, laughing at everyone in front of the throne, thinking they can take the throne down.
God, and he plays two characters.
They're not even aiming at the right target. Oh my God!
Remember,
you're right.
He plays not only himself, not only Cardinal Vaiello, but he plays this other cardinal who's looking. They're vying.
Yeah.
and the show is always like, oh yeah, they say that these popes look so much alike, and
I don't see it.
Yeah, he doesn't see it, but they're the same guy playing
this. Joke. This make a joke. And also, like, if we're talking about cardinals, man, there's some, like, I can't even remember, like, the one fancy dancer cardinal.
Uh-huh.
Like, there is so many great. This is, like I said, this is going to really play hardball in best drama because I like it beyond all reason.
Yeah. It's an easy show to like.
He's easily better than Wes Chatham, which is going to bump him out of top 10, motherfucker. Maybe we'll see if we can
we'll see what happens.
Almost better than John Malkovich. I think he's like there, like right below Ethan, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
Gosh.
Slot him in
there.
There's
a lot of what makes that show work.
He for sure is.
Other than Satan the devil, he might be the primary antagonist, but also.
I feel like we have a problem here. Jude Law is the young Pope and Jude Law is Sam from the third day. I almost feel like we have to eliminate one of these because how do you let somebody enter a category twice?
Do you not want to sweat the bottom of this list?
No, I don't want to sweat anything below like. I mean, we kind of already said, look, these people aren't going to make it beyond.
Okay, so we're going to write now say anything out of the top 20, we are not saying that Brent Saxon was the worst performance of the best performances. We're not saying that Aaron Paul was like anything outside the top 20 is just no. You didn't. you didn't get the nomination.
Right.
You're just
no particular order.
And really, I only care about the top 10, really only care about the top five. And it's going to be hell sorting those things. So I guess, do you see anything in the top 20 that seems like a gross violation of justice?
Oh, boy.
And the only thing is, like, I always try to find a way to get Wes up on the Expanse, man. I like it when he's in the top 10, but I don't know if I can justify it.
Usually he is. I feel like he's made it up there quite a few years.
I think he's made the top five a year. It's always been on strength of a single line, like, you know, how about now? I'm free now, or I'm not that guy.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's the thing about that character. I always, like, it's the single line, and all of those lines are delivered exactly the same. It's extremely the same.
Every season of The Expanse is a device to deliver a set to Chatham so he can spike it, you know?
Right.
So you're just moving the ball around so you can spike it over the net once a season. It's all you want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I'm looking through and I'm like, I could quibble here and there. Like, I don't know if Anthony Boyle is below Nicholas Holt and all that kind of stuff. And as predicted, the elite comedy guys can't even crack the top 10, which seems unfair. But
yeah.
We wanted to make this. That's the thing is, like, man. To make this better, we need to have supporting role, not recognition, mm-hmm. and we need to divide the actors into comedy and non-comedy.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This is already a lot of work. So anybody in the top 20 that's a travesty, and then we can move to the top 10.
Anything I would move around here, just like obviously.
I don't know. I think that I could be talked into moving Sylvia Orlando below Wes Chatham and then move Chatham over Jonathan to get Amos in the top 10.
But you just want Amos in the top 10.
Hey, you said that, not me.
Man, I think Jonathan Majors might be getting sold short here, which is unfortunate because he does do good work and he does it along Michael K. Williams, who is way higher on this list.
Yeah, it just sucks.
And to bump Jonathan Majors from the top 10 to get Amos on there, I just don't feel it's fair.
This is Amos' season. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I don't want to. Yeah, like I don't want to manipulate this any more than my emotions already are. Okay, so
I think there's 10. A grave injustice being done to Carl Urban because Glenn Turman is a supporting character. I don't know that he rises any higher than that.
Okay, here's the thing. You're thinking of about three scenes that he had in this whole season, and that's about as many fucking badass scenes that Glenn had. So, like,
well, hold on. There's a line about
and there's like a one
tickling
like
the one... taint there or something. The way he delivers a line, man.
No, he's Glenn's like very, but that's very hilarious. But like, you know, Glenn like carried like a whole 5 minute one shot.
Oh, yeah.
Monologue scene where Butcher just cocks his eyebrow and grins ferociously or has his a particular vein Urban has on his forehead that pops out when you know he means business.
Those moments where he's like just. So cool. Just like he's threatening a guy in his own house, talking about killing his family, and he's just smiling and sipping tea.
That's that big sip of tea is like such a fucking reaction gif, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I have a hard time putting him over Glenn, but also I can see the argument, too.
And the other injustice is Jude Law is dominating this category, and I don't feel like he... would be allowed two entries in any other award show. Are we the award show that allows unlimited entries?
Has that ever happened?
I don't know. I would like to know if anybody has ever been nominated twice for two different roles in the same award show.
Huh. Though the Academy rules specifically state actors cannot be nominated twice within the same category, they can be nominated for Best Supporting Actor and Best Actor in the same year. Cate Blanchett was previously the most recent actress to achieve this rare feat. And I guess that happened to Scarlett Johansson recently, too.
So would you argue that
in 2020, she was in Jojo Rabbit and also Marriage Story. So
I haven't seen Marriage Story.
Jojo Rabbit would have to be the supporting role, right? Because she's not the star.
I guess. Yeah, she doesn't come until pretty late.
Marriage Story, she is. Like, it's her and your brother in that role, right?
Yeah, Adam Driver.
Yeah.
Would you argue that Jude Law as the young pope is a supporting role?
Yes, but we don't have those categories. So I kind of think you've got a point that we should eliminate. We should only let Jude be. Now, that's not the same as the Mega Baldies, where it's like, you know, you had right. a show that would dominated a category for. Yeah, that's different. But for Baldy's purposes, I could kind of get talked into. It doesn't happen very often. I can't think of a time it's ever happened before.
This might be the first time.
Calendars are busy enough that they can maybe have a movie and a TV show, and one's usually the one worth watching. This is kind of a aberration. What do you think? I think the new Pope is the role, and the third day needs to get bollocksed.
Is the third day really not going to get any more recognition than Biggest Surprise? That's a shame.
You haven't even seen half of it.
It's true. I never got around to watching the second half because Jude Law's not in it. I watched that show because Jude Law was in it.
Yeah, that's why I watched it too. And I never felt like anything was missing. I felt that was a fully contained thing that was awesome and cool and crazy. And like, I can't imagine what a whole other story was going to bring to it, but maybe I should probably, it's only 3 more hours.
I mean, the real story seems to be like the island, right? And the religion, the sinners on that island. So maybe there is another layer to that they can bring with 3 more episodes, but I don't know.
We disappear him.
That's a shame. That's a real shame.
Okay.
Jude Law's supporting role is going to get nominated.
Hey, Wes Chatham got in with no.
Hold on. We can find. I'm suddenly Chris Rock's looking pretty good.
and then we're just following Oscar rules, baby. You know.
Yeah, you can't blame us. Blame the Oscars.
You gotta pick a fake award show to model yourself off of, and why not the Oscars?
I have a very strong opinion that we've rearranged these here. Let me throw this out here.
I like it when you have strong opinions.
And see how this feels. For people listening to this, I just moved Jude Law to third below Anthony Starr as Homelander and Michael K. Williams as Montrose Freeman.
Can we unironically say Anthony Starr as Homelander is the best thing on television this year?
I feel pretty strongly
defensible
that one of the two guys that I just put a 1 and 2 are the best performance of the year for male actors. Because I actually think there are better, shockingly, there are better female performances in Lovecraft Country.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. That's how my list would shake out.
And this is that kind of feels weird that like the psychopath Superman from the, you know, comic book deconstruction. But, you know, this is the Baldies. This isn't like some self-serious award show.
Right. Even though we're consulting the rules of the Oscars.
I guess we should have done the other thing we never addressed is like the people that didn't make the cut. Like you're not getting Mandalorian on here.
Yeah. Would anybody argue that Mandalorian needs to be on here?
No, I'm just saying, like, I bet there's some people are going to ask, like, what about Mandalorian? What about The Walking Dead? What about,
The Walking Dead?
Hey, there's some good stuff on The Walking Dead this year.
We don't know. We haven't seen it.
Oh, that's true.
There was we've seen season 9.
That's true. I don't, I mean, gosh.
I have a hard time arguing that anybody was better than Anthony Starr, because that is He seems built for that role. He seems absolutely perfect.
Like I said,
I can't imagine anyone doing this.
He plays a moral step or two to the good on Banshee, but like he's Banshee is incredible, and a lot of the same energy he brought, that same ferocity and kind of insanity, but like a slightly morally good character, is paying off in spades. And that's the other thing, is that you tell him he plays this all American. Have you seen this guy talk? This guy's the Aussiest Aussie that ever rode off on a kangaroo.
Oh, well, that just seals the deal, man.
You
can't compare Carl Urban with his Cockney Zealand accent. Cock New Zealand? That's what he's doing. Cock New Zealand accent.
Yeah, no, he's doing amazing. And also, he's like, by all accounts, this really sunny, cheerful guy. Like, mm-hmm. he's kind of like, Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine. Like, Hugh Jackman wants to dance and sing. He doesn't want to pop out adamantium claws and schnick schnack motherfuckers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of like even more amazing that by all accounts, this guy is like a real sweetheart. He's more crocodile hunter than all American neo-Nazi light. But he sells it, you know?
Yeah. He sells absolutely everything about it, as does Michael K. Williams, as does Jude Law, Clint Thurman, Carl Urban, like all these
guys.
They're
all weirdo characters, man. Like that's like, yeah. like these are particular roles, you know, mm-hmm. psychotic, proto-fascist Superman, hyper-masculine gay black man in the 50s, a young Pope.
Right.
Who might be actually Jesus Christ, who actually might be the second coming of Jesus Christ.
Could be.
And then you get like, you know, then Dr. Senator is like, one spectrum removed of Michael K. Williams' performance. Carl Urban is mostly Anthony Starr's performance as Homelander, but you take minus the superpowers and overt fascism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like it's. You know what? I think I do support Homelander being the number one spot.
Okay. How do we feel about the top five? Is that properly ordered? Because I think these are going to be our top five will be our nominees in the actual category, right?
Yeah, and I guess the other thing is that there were no flawless dramas this year. I felt like very strongly that you didn't have like, you know, one that just like got all the oxygen or all the like it because of the production cutting a lot of the stuff down and scaling stuff back and making projects be shelved. It's really noticeable in the movie category, but it also hurt the TV category a bit too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think the top five look good.
Anybody who we're just obviously overlooking here?
Exactly. I can make an argument for Ethan
Shafted still, but like,
maybe. But I think I can make an argument for Ethan Hawke being in the top five. But like, it's only one and a half. It's only like a half a Baldy because it's just me,
right?
A hard time pushing for that.
Yeah.
I guess I'm cool with this.
Okay. And Anthony Starr as Homelander wins this.
I mean,
damn.
You're the kingmaker here, Jim.
I liked it, man. Everything about it. It was exactly what it needed to be.
You're not wrong.
All right. That's the category. For the people out there listening, we finally landed on five to one. Carl Urban is Billy Butcher. The Boys season two. Glenn Turman is Dr. Senator in Fargo season four. Jude Law is Young Pope in The New Pope. Michael K. Williams is Montrose Freeman in Lovecraft Country. And the winner of this category, Anthony Starr is Homelander in The Boys season two. Congratulations to us. Another category in the bag.